This is Hal Bryan, senior editor from EA Content and Digital Publications, and sitting in on a stint at EA Radio with a chance to talk to somebody with an absolutely fascinating history in the world of aviation. It's a pleasure to sit here for a few minutes with George Tischler. And George, your father, Herb. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very glad to have you. So, Herb, you have been in aviation just about your entire life. So you started in the World War II era in the Luftwaffe. Can you tell me a little bit about what was your role there? What was your job?
During the early 40s, he was awarded a ROTC type of scholarship with the Luftwaffe with the intent of being something between an aeronautical engineer and an A&P mechanic.
Okay.
And he was assigned to the Henschel Air Force Base, or Henschel Company, as for schooling there. And that's when he, you know, that's why he was in Berlin.
Okay, right. So you're a junior officer in the Luftwaffe, and were you working on airplanes? Were you involved with aviation? You said you were assigned to Henschel.
Yeah. No, this is where I started.
Okay, you started at Henschel.
Yeah.
What sorts of aircraft were you working on?
They have to be shipped afterwards to the Russians, and we have to fight like crazy.
I see. Were you working on any of the early jets?
They don't really. They call in paper, so and so. Every day or every second day when I get in there, I just have to fill them out and write them. Yeah, so
okay.
Where they use them completely, I don't know.
Understandable.
Because this was various places. So.
Okay. George, maybe you can help step us through a little bit of that early history stuff as well.
Yeah. It was basically, like I said, cross between A&P and aeronautical engineering. And the first few years, he was basically assigned, basically A&P school as such. And we got done with that phase of that training. Unfortunately, the war demands overcame, you know, schooling demands. And so he was assigned a rifle. And even though he's a Luftwaffe cadet, he was assigned to a Wehrmacht unit.
Oh, interesting.
And eventually he was he jumped in the gun a little bit, and you could, you know, ask him about it later. But eventually he was assigned to Armor Group North, which was at the Danzig area.
Okay.
And he finished, you know, it was in like January 45 as such. And, you know, he could tell a really interesting story about a battle he was involved with in Marienburg, which was nearby as such. And then later, when the war ended, they surrendered about a few days after the war ended, and he became a Russian POW for a few years.
Wow. How long were you in Russia after World War, after the end of the war?
Two years.
2 years.
October 49.
Wow, all the way to October of 49.
I mean,
when you were released, you were released from the Soviet Union in 49, you said, what? Where did you go next?
I went, they sent me home with to Berlin, Regensburg, Neublitz, and this is where I get caught by the Americans.
Well, not really. What happened, since one of the things that made him kind of special to the Russians was that he spoke German and Russian, so he became the camp interpreter, and even though he's only, he's not even 18 when he was captured. He quickly became the number one guy in the camp because he could talk to both sides.
Sure.
Yep. This in the camp, it's ages. Yeah. This was 91 German prisoners.
900.
Yeah, 901.
Yeah. 901. You and 900 other guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in the main office of this group. The Russian officers, they talked to me before they can talk to the other Germans, you know.
I know the radio guys can't see this, but I need to show you this.
Oh, yeah.
In October 49.
Oh, wow. What we're seeing here is pretty amazing.
This was the Russian gave me when they released me.
It was actually a two-sided document. And on one side, everything's in Russian, and the other side, everything's in German. And that's basically what I call his get-out-of-jail card.
Right. So Ausweis, I see here where you're leaving, getting out of the USSR.
Yeah, this here is Russian here. All Russian here.
And the other side, yeah.
Right. Wow, that's and remarkable.
This is what they gave me when they released me. I must say again, they did no bad things with me, nothing. They hung, they traduced, they treated me very gentle, very good.
That's interesting. We don't always hear that about POWs, German POWs in particular. No,
the Russian officers, they were working with the 900 Germans. Yes. So they all talked to me in good Russian and respectful dealing, you know, very good.
So there was no
problem whatsoever.
Now, so once you were released, you were sent to Berlin and then back home.
Yeah, the Russian, they drove from the name of the town. They put us in the train. The train went to Berlin. Berlin, we got out, and with another train, which goes to southern Germany, to Bavaria, my home. You know?
One of the interesting things that did happen, though, is that since he was a base, the CIA wanted to know everything of all the Germans coming out. But they found out he was, you know, in charge of the camp, or that being the interpreter site. They really wanted to talk to him. And he pointed out a few things, you know, some of the things that they've done, and was able to verify it. And so the CIA has asked, what can we do for you? And so, and it kind of returned favor or such. He said, we'd like to work on airplanes. Wow. So now Erding Air Force Base at that time was just down the road. Right. And so they say, hey, go down to Erding Air Force Base and go speak to the 85th Air Depot Wing.
Yeah. And according to the notes, you were working on F-84s, the Republic F-84?
Many other ones.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Well, the Air Depot Wing was working all sorts of airplanes then. And the way the story goes is, getting back to the story such, is that he went to go see this captain, and the captain basically told him to leave with prejudice, for lack of a better word for it.
Okay.
And so he went back and told the people told him to go there, said, you know, the CIA guys, and they said, go back next week. Same captain, way different attitude.
a talking to from the CIA does have a tendency to change your attitude a little bit. So you spent some time there with the U.S. Air Forces in Europe, working on jets, things like that. So you finally got to work on airplanes.
Yeah.
But then, as I'm looking through this fascinating collection of documents here, you find yourself in Ecuador working on an airplane that's dear to me, the Cessna T-50.
I went to Ecuador first because they paid me good for getting the airplanes straightened out again.
Right.
This was the only thing they public airplanes.
The commercial airliners.
Private. Mm-hmm. And I have to keep them things flying. I just want to get used to this whole thing.
One of the things that's happening was that they shut down the 85th out of Erding.
Okay.
And so they kind of gave him the option of either going to France or going on his own. So he did, and he ended up in Ecuador working for a small airline there.
Ah, that's terrific. And it's a fleet of 25 of the Cessna Bobcats, the Bamboo Bomber, as many of us know.
This is one reason in Ecuador I got married there, too.
You got married in Ecuador, really?
Yeah, I was sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's terrific.
Oh, she was a nice woman. She died
about a year ago.
6-7 months ago.
No, about a year ago.
I'm very sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm.
This was your mother, George?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to hear that. And was she native Ecuadorian? Met her there. So after Ecuador, you found your way, again, looks like it says here, you found your way to Florida.
Yeah.
So Florida, and you did some work on gyrocopters and all kinds of things.
Florida was my home area.
It became his home, yes.
Okay.
All close to together, that's why I end up in Regensburg.
No, you ended up in Florida.
Florida, yeah.
That's excellent. So you modified a Breezy, you rebuilding Cessna 172s, all kinds of things. It looks to me like you mentioned this Umba gyrocopter.
Mm-hmm. Umba, yeah.
And then
Umba, this was the one we take up.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. Yeah, I just see a photo here. It looks that is that the Umba there?
It
looks
that's
like an aerospace 18A, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we're stepping through your career again here, Herb. Staying in Florida through, about 1971?
Yes.
That's the year it says here?
Mm-hmm. Frankly, I don't even remember this thing.
I don't remember 1971 that well, although I was around.
Mm-hmm.
I was up to no good, I can promise you that. Working on Bell 47 helicopters, and then, as this is going on,
I worked on helicopter and worked on all.
Worked on everything.
Everything that flies.
Everything that flies.
it was at Pinellas County Airport, or Clearwater St. Pete International at the time.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you, you started training as a teenager in Germany, and then you were basically, it sounds like, shuffled over, conscripted into the Wehrmacht. How did you end up learning how to work on airplanes and helicopters and everything that flies? You just learned on the job, or did you ever get to go back to school?
No. Should have told him, did I?
No. He basically, you know, in the AMP training that he had at Henschel, it was basically sheet metal work. And if you notice, what he predominantly worked on was on sheet metal side of things.
Those Cessna T-50s being a very prominent exception to that, bamboo bomber. Yeah. But
back then, you also had to know a little bit about fabric and fabric covering and such.
That's terrific.
One thing that was interesting is that when they first showed up to this country, you know, they moved into a duplex, and the person on the other side of the duplex actually knew the Wright brothers.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
He was a good band.
Arthur Holohan. Clifford Holohan, I'm sorry. And his brother was Arthur, and Arthur's the one that told us that he was sweet on Catherine Wright.
Ah, sweet on Catherine, who I don't believe ever married, if I remember correctly.
She did marry later on.
Yeah. Okay, she did later on. Well,
It caused some problems in the family, but that's another history.
There's a strike against me then. But of course, but yeah, some of her descendants that are still with us today.
Mm-hmm.
Still in Florida, you worked on what became the prototype for the Stuart S-51. He was a 70% scale, 51?
Yeah.
What
is in Omaha?
No, it was in Florida. It was Clearwater, Florida, still. Florida? You were working for Doc Palm at the
first
time.
Yeah.
So was that your idea? You wanted to build the P-51, or did somebody come to you and want help with it?
I didn't want so long as I want this stuff on the pay us all so much.
There was a radiologist in the area that was interested in having the P-51 built as a scale version and such, and then Stuart showed up and got involved also at later on down the road.